Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio dial, you can stream us on the Odyssey app. We're also available on TuneIn Radio, as well as iHeartRadio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X. The Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Man. What a night.
What a night of sports. Last night was a phenomenal night to be a sports fan. Let's talk about it with the guy that we welcome each and every Tuesday to the program. He, of course, is the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast, as well as VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights. You can also check out the VSiN Betting Tailgate Show, airing on Saturdays. He's on the Everything app at 1 Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Well, hello there. Yes.
Hello there.
That was quite the night in the old sports world. Sometimes you sit back and you say, well, thank you for the enjoyment last night, because, man, that night had everything.
The only complaint that I had was I couldn't have sound on both games. I mean, I guess technically, you know, I could have turned the other TV up.
I'm kind of used to it.
Yeah, I know you more than anyone. You even, I think I'm one of the people that watches sports without sound the most. You watch it more than I do without sound.
Look, on the week, it's not without choice. I like these broadcasters. I know, I guess I want to pick your brain regarding the NBC broadcast, because I saw that there were a bunch of people complaining about it last night. And anytime that people are being critical of my guy, Mike Tirico, I am antennas up. But yeah, it was... Yeah, what a night. I mean, to get those two teams on the ice going to overtime, the comeback, and then another just gut-wrenching loss for the city of Buffalo, and then whatever the hell. I'd be curious to get – so many things were going in my brain last night watching Victor Wembanyama, and one of them that came to the precipice, and one of my buddies texted me and said – yeah, we're not winning the gold medal in 2028 with that dude.
I think that's going to be the question that we will start with, which is, what did we watch last night? And you and I have talked about this, that one of the complaints that you and I have of the era that we live in, particularly in our business, is you have to go to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I compare it to this. Was it two playoffs ago where we started doing the Anthony Edwards, Michael Jordan comparisons?
I believe that was two playoffs ago, yeah.
So when those comps came out, I'm someone that likes to watch Anthony Edwards. I think he's a very good player.
Too.
That felt like, let's pump the brakes a bit here.
Agreed, yeah. I think I don't know if we were doing this show together at that time, but I think we a lot of us had, all right, you know, let's relax. He's really good, hasn't really won anything yet. And the same can be said about Wembanyama. It was game one of the Western Conference Finals. But watching that, all I could think about, so I had the one thought of, man, we might not be winning the Olympics on our home turf in 2028. My second thought was, if this dude can stay healthy, and that's where I was like, if he stays healthy, we're looking at, I think, the most dominant player, big man, since Shaq. There were moments last night where it looked like the defending world champion, a team that is insanely deep and has, it feels like, answers for everything, had no answer for Victor Wembanyama most of the night. Now, if you want to nitpick it, you know, Jalen Williams, I thought, kind of had a heat check moment late in overtime. And if he's calms things down a little bit, they get a bucket there. The 30-footer that Wemby hits doesn't do anything, and OKC wins that game. But I even think, even if they lost last night, I'm curious your thoughts, even if Even if it was, let's say, 112-108 final score, OKC gets the win because they were up three with the ball with less than a minute to go. Poor execution. They get the ball back. Wemby hits the three. We go to double overtime. I still think we're talking about an all-time performance, but maybe not to the level that we are, because he took it to another level in the second overtime where he just put Oklahoma City to bed.
I think you're right, because what I found myself the entire time thinking, and I know there's people that watch the NBA night in, night out that are screaming at the television or screaming at the radio right now, hey, where have you been? Like, you know, almost, you know, you and I will get very annoyed at the people that will parachute in on a college football team. Like, I want to be very clear. I think George can back me up on this. I have thought that this guy's an alien for a very long time. But I do think we also have to acknowledge that there are, this is a postseason sport, and virtually for better or worse, everyone's career is going to be defined by what do they do in the postseason.
And it's also who they played.
Correct.
Right? It's not the Timberwolves. It's not the Trailblazers. It's the defending champion.
It's a team Oklahoma that has not City lost Thunder. A game in the playoffs, and I don't think they had lost a home playoff game since. Actually, you know what? No, didn't the Pacers got him game one, right? With
yeah.
Halliburton?
Yep.
The Halliburton shot?
I think they had won, dating back to last year because they won game seven, they had won nine straight playoff games heading into last night. And
I mean, what was Tirico's stat? They were 78-15 on the home floor the last two seasons?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say this all goes away if they don't win this series. And we do, look, I'm sure all the talk shows on ESPN and every, you should be embracing this. Let's enjoy it. Let's not go too crazy, but let's enjoy what we're seeing. Now, I'm not trying to play devil's advocate here, but, I mean, in 2021, Giannis had one of the greatest clinching games in the history of the NBA, and I feel like we don't talk about it anymore. So, like, you know, to think that we'll never forget May 18th because of a game one performance, it will be remembered. I don't know if it'll be remembered forever because, like you said, what is this postseason going to bring? If it brings them their first title of many, then yeah, you think back to this night. But I'm just want to embrace what we saw last night, because you look at that team, though, San Antonio, and yeah, you've got an alien who goes for 41-24, plays 49 minutes, by far the most minutes he's ever played in his career. But then you look at Harper making monster plays, and the fact that they had an all-star point guard who did not play last night in De'Aaron Fox. So I hope this series is an absolute war, and we get it to go the distance, because, man, last night for a game one, I mean, Oklahoma City took a bunch of haymakers. And SGA, you know, it's funny because I feel like there's starting to be the skeptics. You know, it's like SGA has now hit the peak where it's like, all right, now let's start bringing him off his pedestal. And I felt like there were some skeptics out there. He shouldn't have won MVP. He gets handed the award, you know, prior to the game. He had some ups and downs in the Lakers series. And, like, he made some clutch plays late, but he was off last night. And, you know, the true best in the world, they rise to the occasion. So I can't wait to see what his rebuttal is on Wednesday night.
So I think there's a couple things at play. Number one, I think in terms of Wembanyama, using your comp with how quickly we forget, and we definitely quickly forget in the NBA, I think more so than any other sport. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, think about how many times it was like, oh, that's it. That locks in LeBron, best ever. And then it's like a week later, like, couldn't do this.
But there was something about, like, let's say with Giannis. Okay, Giannis is a physical freak that we'd not seen a whole lot of. But he had a flaw. Not a great free throw shooter. not a tremendously skilled offensive guy, but he could bully you, and he was skilled enough.
Yep.
I think the problem with Wembanyama is you're watching this and you go, what's his flaw? And your only answer is, can he stay healthy? Because we've never seen somebody this big, this athletic, that does what he can do. Because, like, in the same sequence, the guy splits three defenders and dunks it like it was a casual, like, layup line dunk over three defenders, comes back down, pulls up from 35 feet, and drains it.
It really, to me, right now, and he's 22 years old, so people are already saying he's going to be the greatest of all time. I mean, the biggest thing about LeBron, whether you're wherever you have him ranked, his best attribute, I think, is the fact that he's been insanely durable in the longevity.
100%.
He's played from 18
to 41. Been a remarkably high-level player for realistically 20 years.
Right. He has been, yeah, he's been in the league since, what, 03?
Yeah.
And he just had really good numbers in the playoffs. And that's the thing about Wemby. I said it last night on the air. I'm like, he reminds me of peak Shaq in L.A. Like, you just, good luck, man. Like, good luck trying to stop him. But when you tackle Wemby, he's going to go to the free throw line and make his free throws.
Right.
And, like, I was listening to, I think it was Windhorst had his podcast late last night, and like, the biggest knock on Wemby, and he didn't really fall into it last night, is that he gets a little bit, he knows he can shoot, and he kind of drifts sometimes. Last night, he was, like, laser focused, like, get me the ball inside, they can't stop me. And he can overpower you. Like, there was that play where he kind of lowered his shoulder and lifted up, and he can also be nimble enough on his feet and, you know, make kind of crazy circus shots. I mean, that's just last night, like, I felt like everything was on display. And for the most part, it was like, yeah, well, hasn't got a bunch of blocks. And then lo and behold, second overtime, he gets the game sealing block. I think, was it on Jalen Williams at the rim where he comes across? I mean, the guy's going to have a quadruple double before we know it. I think the biggest thing right now is the health. You're hoping that this guy can stay healthy, because if he does and continues to get better and stronger, man,
I'm trying to remember who did the T-Wolves put on him, because Randall wasn't on him all Rudy? The time. Did they go? Yeah, I guess they went Rudy.
Why?
Why didn't they put Chet?
Yeah, so I was curious, was it just so Chet could help off? So it was like, have Caruso try to slow him down? And look, in the last play of, was that regulation?
Yep.
When Caruso kind of hindered him enough, and then Chet came over with the help side block. Like, that was,
I think,
that
was it also done. Williams that got a hand in, so he didn't catch it cleanly? Because I remember thinking in real time, I was like, he should have just put it up. Like, I know there was 3 seconds and whatever, but I was like, that was going to be the cleanest look, because everybody knew as soon as the ball got to him, everyone was going to collapse, and he was not giving the ball up. So I was thinking he should have shot it, and then they showed the other angle, and you could see he got a hand in, so he didn't catch it super cleanly. I think the strategy, I think there's also something to this. For whatever reason, I don't know if it just goes one direction, but Wembanyama has something against Chet Holmgren.
Oh, he hates him.
I have no idea what is the origin story.
Going back to the Windhorst, what's that, the Hoop Collective.
Yep.
They had like a quick 20-minute pod last night. I was walking my dog. I was like, yes, great. And they indicated multiple times on the podcast that Wemby hates, well, I don't know if they said hate, really does not like Chet. And I think it's because similar body types, they kind of came up the ranks together. I think, remind me if I'm correct, I think they showed, like, they went head to head in like an under 18 USA France championship, and USA won by like one. Like, they've been, I think, linked together for a long time. And that dude clearly does not like Chet Holmgren.
It certainly, to me, though, appears that it is much more of a Wimby hates Chet than it is like they truly hate each other. That's the way that it's certainly.
Yeah, because and even Wemby said it last night. Like, Wemby, I didn't know it, but it doesn't surprise me. He's kind of got a little bit of that, like, anything that is out there, I will use as motivation. And someone asked him last night about finishing third in the MVP and SGA getting the award. And he was like, yeah, what you said. Like, that got him going too.
Well, the reason why I think, I don't know if Oklahoma City would ever admit this, but I think there's the idea of, like, we know we need Chet, but if we put Wimby on him, he might break him, like, mentally, physically, everything. But I do think you're probably right. I think what their real strategy is, put the smaller defender on him, see if you can get the ball out of his hands. And then if you can't get the ball out of his hands, then we've got somebody at the rim. So essentially you're doubling him without necessarily blitzing, as they like to say, which drives me insane. It's like, that's not a freaking blitz. That's just running another defender at him. Like, that is my read on it. I think there's also this element of, well, we got to have Chet on him. If Chet's on him for 80% of the game, how many fouls does he get?
Right.
I will say, I do think they're going to have to change something with how they were defending him with the smaller player. How many times last night did we see the high screen and roll, and all you have to do to get Wemby the ball is just lob it up to him? Because the short guy, he just can't do anything about it.
I don't know.
He can palm the ball 9 feet in the air.
I think the reason why, if somebody wants to come up with the most hyperbolic take, I was completely open to the idea, when you're watching what you're watching last night, you go, this league's changed forever. To me, like, I get it. It's a Western Conference Finals game one, but you kind of know it when you see it. That felt like Tiger Woods at the 97 Masters. And I think there's an interesting comp there, because it's like, if you were someone that followed golf, you knew that Tiger Woods was not just another really good player. This guy wins 3 S Juniors, 3 US AMs, national championship. Like, he has every accolade you could possibly ever have. And then he shows up, and what he did was playing a different sport. He's blowing it past everyone. He's better with his irons. Everything they did, he did better. And that was the thing that you were watching last night. It's like, okay, realistically, it's like, what is this guy's weakness? And if you want to use the Windhorst example, I do think the T-Wolves for a little bit kind of baited him into, hey man, we know he's a good enough three-point shooter, but we'll take 38% versus getting dunked on all night.
Oh, it was a big victory for San Antonio that he only shot 2 threes.
Yeah.
And one of them was just a absolute, like, I'm going to pull this because I'm the man. And, you know, I was thinking last night about this game, because what we do, especially, you know, for me, from a betting standpoint, I'm like, all right, what's the overreaction? The overreaction is Spurs are going to win the title.
Well, can I pause you? Because yeah. I'd like to go back one step, because before we get to the overreaction. Why was this series basically priced, as of yesterday, why was this series basically priced the exact same as Knicks and Cavs? Because we saw these teams, and I get it, the regular season went now, but it's like, this, if you wanted to say, hey, coin flip, but OKC's got home court, we'll give them like minus $1.50, okay, but like, the fact that you could get, what, basically last night, I think you could get around 225, 230 for the Spurs?
Yeah. No, the Spurs, yeah, the Spurs were priced pretty big dog, and this might be one of those moments in gambling. It's kind of like Indiana college football, right? It was like, you're never going to get a Cignetti team at that price again when they were like 100-1 to win the title. And even as the season went on, I was like, yeah, I don't believe it. Now, I think the Spurs are a little bit different. I think people believed it. But I think if I had to talk to odds makers or pro bettors, they still had the Thunder rated significantly better than the Spurs. And last night, I think, opened up the eyes quite a bit. And now, because of what we saw, it's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. You know, when I digest the game, it's like, okay, Wemby had an all-time elite performance. Advantage Thunder, right? Can't do that again. But De'Aaron Fox didn't play. Stephon Castle turned the ball over 11 times. SGA didn't play very well. 7 of 23 from the field. But Alex Caruso had an out-of-body experience. So there's like a lot of things about last night that I'm like, I don't think Wemby's going to go for 40 and 20 every game, but also you've got an all-star point guard that could be back for game two that averaged, what, 17 and 10?
Okay, I guess this is where I struggle, because I also thought a significant development, it felt to me like the Thunder wasted the Caruso game. Now, Caruso has proven that regular season numbers do not matter for him. He's going to be there in the playoffs.
By the way, his over-under last night was 7.5 points. I think he got that in like 4 minutes.
I think he got it in his first three shots. Didn't he start 3 for 3?
He had 7 points. He had the first 7 points, I think, of the game for the Thunder, and I want to say like 10 of the first 12 or something.
Oh,
like
by
that.
The way, he started the game on the bench.
Yes.
So when I look at the adjustments, I think the biggest adjustments are going to just be, how is this game officiated? Because I think everyone was under the impression the more laxed whistle goes advantage OKC. I think you saw last night the more laxed whistle probably goes advantage San Antonio.
No, I agree. I mean, Wemby and Chet were battling down low. And I can't remember, maybe it was Reggie Miller who pointed it out. End of the first overtime.
The hold that they did call him one possession, but they didn't call it on.
It was like the last play.
It was the end of the first overtime where the ball goes out of bounds, and they were debating whether or not
time put back on
correct.
The clock.
Or whether or not he'd first stepped out before they got the timeout, and then they got the timeout.
And then they showed the replay, like, ooh, Wemby got pretty lucky there. He was holding them down. So that's something, too, to keep an eye on, you know, as this.
Because he did have, even before overtime, I think he had 4 fouls. Like, if he picks up 2 other fouls throughout the night, because that's the other thing that's clearly obvious. The Thunder are going to win the minutes when he's not on the floor.
Yes. So Victor was plus 16 last night.
That's it?
So when he was off the floor, the Spurs were minus 9.
I mean, like, to me, it's like,
he played, what, 49 out of 58 minutes?
Yeah, right? I think he finished.
And that's another thing, too. Like, they've always been pretty cautious about his minutes during the regular season, right? And, like, the fact that he was able to do what he did last night and then get to another level, it felt like, in double overtime.
Well, that was the other thing that was standing out to me, because Tirico had mentioned that the Thunder had played more guys, fewer minutes. And in that second overtime, you were just watching two gassed teams.
Williams was pooped.
And then there was one guy that looked like he was like on Lance Armstrong blood doping. Like, that possession where he just decides, like, he was going to take on a 3-on-1, and he just knifed through them, and all they could do was just, like, tackle him. Like, that was kind of, to me, like, that was the moment that you realize, like, oh, this is a problem, because now that they're gassed, they do not have any answer. Like, they were able to interfere enough, but I don't know. Like that was the other thing is like when we were kind of discussing like Shaq and whatnot, it's like, what are the levels of great players? Because I kind of like sketched out half-baked. See if you agree with this.
Okay.
So we're talking about the best of the best. These are Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not talking about ranking the tiers of current NBA players. I'm talking about everyone that's ever played basketball. The tiers that I came up with, transformative, which I defined as someone who reinvented the game. They had to like change rules for him, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, with Kareem, you got to widen the lane with,
I mean, Wilt. I feel like we have to throw Wilt out of this because he just was so outrageous outside of Bill Russell.
Right. But I do kind of think peak of his powers, Shaq, is in that category.
Oh, I hold 100%.
I mean, he averaged 40 and 20 for a playoffs. Then the next one that I came up with was the generational talent, which I kind of defined as someone that dominated for a decade or more. This is where I think you got your LeBrons, your Jordans and whatnot. Like, but he might be in this, like I don't even know like how you categorize him. Because yeah. I do think this is the other aspect. While when he was shut down for the season last year, they were like on the outside, look, play in or fringe, mm-hmm. maybe out. But it does kind of make you wonder, like, did the Thunder get their one title when they needed to? Because you could see where if this guy's in the league for the next decade, like, what do you do? Because, well, like, the other thing with Giannis is, so, like, when we're talking about that Giannis series, Giannis is 28 at that point. This kid's 22.
Well, and I think, too, whether it's luck or just a really good organization, like, Giannis, his surrounding cast was his best players, and they were good, Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, the main two, right? Look at the main pieces around Victor.
So
Stephon Castle.
Well, this was a fun question. So our boy, DeMichael Cole, that goes does Fridays with us, he threw out this question. And I want to get your thoughts on it because it's going down the same path that you're going. How many players last night are the second best player on Detroit?
So, like, are you throwing out Victor?
So we are saying we are doing the obvious, because I've also fallen into this thought. I'm not convinced that all of the guys that are on the Thunder, if they're on other teams, I'm not convinced. Like, do I really in my heart of hearts believe like Jalen Williams is all NBA if he's on the Hornets? I don't know. And maybe that's disrespectful to him. But I think
I've seen some moments of him that I think he's. I mean, once again, it's a weird question. I mean, the Hornets, I know, made the playoffs this year, play in, but like it's hard to make all NBA when your team stinks.
Right. I think, though, what I would also argue is guys that are on great teams, I think, get hyperinflated. And we cited it, I don't know if it was last week. There was a guy on Twitter who put this essentially like a line graph out, and that what gets so many of these teams is they have to pay their second and third guys, and the gap between the second and third guy versus a 50th percentile guy is not as wide as you think, but the gap between the 10th best player in the NBA and the first best player in the NBA is just as wide. And you'll think of it in that terms. And so that's kind of where I am with the Thunder, which is like Alex Caruso on the Bulls was a good player, but like they were willing to part ways with him. Like I that's kind of where I don't know. 'Cause like I'm watching the Spurs and I'm like, Man, it's really easy to be a great defender when you know that I can just basically take every single chance I want because he's back there.
Think about the fortune that that the Spurs have had. Now, they had the same, they were one of the worst teams in 23, but they win the lottery.
They win the lottery in a year where it was the, like, for instance, the Grizzlies, if they would have won the lottery, like, yeah, from a professional business perspective, I'm like, hell yeah. But the Grizzlies finishing thirds, not really that significantly different than if the Grizzlies would have won it. If the Grizzlies win the Wembanyama lottery versus finishing third in that lottery, well, what, now we're talking about a huge difference.
I mean, if the Spurs get the third pick, they're a lottery team this year.
I think almost assuredly.
You got Scoot Henderson as opposed to Victor Wembanyama. So,
I mean, I guess you could say that you're the Blazers.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So they were the ninth. They finished or eighth, maybe. I think they finished eighth.
And then last year, they had a 6% chance of getting a top four pick, and they got two. And they end up with Dylan Harper, who looks very much, he's not Wemby, but he's very much the part. And then they got Stephon Castle. Like they don't stink often. And when they've been in the lottery, they have. It seemingly nailed it. Like, look at the 2024 draft for a moment. Number one, Zachary Richichet. Maybe a bust. We'll see. Number two, Alex Saar. Number three, Reed Sheppard. Number four, Stephon Castle. Number five, Ron Holland. Did he even play in the Pistons series?
Not that I recall.
Number six, is this... To John Sulin?
Is he the...
Is he here?
Was...
He played in 37 games for the Hornets this year.
Keep going.
This is, once again, this is 24. So this is just a couple years ago. Number seven, Donovan Clingan. But pretty good. Pretty good player at seven, I think.
I mean, this is the Edie draft.
Yeah. Number eight, Rob Dillingham. Number nine, Zach Edey. Number 10, Cody Williams. Number 11, Matthias Buzelis. Number 12, Nikola Topic, who is not playing. Number 13, Devin Carter. Number 14, Bob Carrington. Khalil Ware is number 15. Jared McCain. He's a part of this run. Did he do anything last night?
Not really.
I mean, that's the thing about the Thunder, though, is that they do have those guys that come off the bench that can have those big games. Jared McCain had it against the Lakers.
Their depth is what I like. I guess the other thing I was thinking about with them is it feels like now more than ever, you cannot be a specialist. You can't stay on the floor as a specialist. It's almost like if you're a nine offensively and a four defensively, you'd much rather have a player that's a seven on the offensive end and a seven on the defensive end. Everyone's too good at figuring out how to get you off the floor.
Well, and I think that's going to be interesting as you swerve into the draft a little bit about Darius Acuff. Like, he's a nine, you know, from a prospect standpoint, maybe even a 10 offensively. But how low is he defensively, right?
And maybe you can get away with it at point guard more. Because, I mean, I'm sorry. I will never buy into the, you know, Steph learned to play defense. No, they figured out a way to surround him and then have him being ultra aggressive.
Sure. Yeah. What we saw last night was an epic performance. I'm not going to say all time because it was game one of a Western Conference Finals. Like, all time to me is Giannis 50 and 15 in a clinching game. I think he had five blocks against the Suns as well. But I think it's setting it up for this dude is capable.
It felt like the scene in The Dark Knight when the Joker comes in. We're here.
Yeah.
We made it. Like, that's what it felt like. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasselstein is going to join the program. We will talk some Grizzlies with him because we haven't gotten to speak to him since we found out the Grizzlies will have the number 3 pick. We'll talk about that and maybe what we watched in the Western Conference Finals next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Eric Hasselstein is the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. Kind enough to join us each and every Tuesday. Eric, I know it was a tough week last week, but now that you kind of had a little bit of time to gather your thoughts, when you think about your favorite Brandon Clark memories, what comes to mind?
Ironically, I don't think any of them. My top ones don't come from the court.
Yeah.
Obviously, his athleticism made him stand out. It did from the word go. He joined us in summer league in 2019, after the trades could clear. So we were already there in Vegas and we were awaiting Brandon's arrival and Grayson Allen's arrival. D'Anthony Melton was injured. He couldn't play. He had been acquired in a trade as well. Ja was not going to participate in summer league, because they just knew what they had and he had a minor injury, and they're like, there's no reason for you to go out there. The Pelicans did the same thing with Zion. I think he played one game, and that was it. So we were all there kind of enjoying it. Some of the other players that were already on the roster were there. Dylan was there for a minute. Jaren was there. And in comes BC, and in his first game, you're like, oh, boy, this kid's got a little something extra. And proceeds, after missing one game, to really dominate the next three and put the Grizzlies into the winner's bracket. And for those that don't remember, back then you played 4 pool play games and they took the top 8 teams record-wise out of that pool play and put them in just basically a single game elimination bracket. If you didn't make the top 8, you were sent off into basically a consolation game where if you watch those, getting ready for your regular games, you're like, this is like watching a pickup game in the park at times because nobody cared. Everybody just wanted to go home. You know, I called it the Vegas zombie walk,
yeah.
Which is you've been there for 9 days.
Yep.
You know it's over. You just want to get out.
It's the scene in The Hangover at the end. You know, when they're just there.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I said it is. I learned pretty early on that if you're going to be there like 11, 12 days, you got to, like, a couple of nights, you just got to call the timeout and just go, I'm out.
Yep.
Just give yourself a flagrant two for what you did the night before and go to bed. But Brandon came in and, you know, really dominated. And so we were all kind of wondering, like, hey, he by far was the best player in this thing. Is he going to win the regular MVP? And he does. And so we're like, all right, that's awesome. Well, let's go win this. And it was either the quarterfinal or semifinal game. We were down 8 late, and he just took over. He just refused to lose the game. Sent it to overtime, dominated, had a big tip in overtime, sends us to the championship, dominates in that, wins. And they made the announcement. It's the first time ever we've had a player win the MVP in the regular portion and the championship portion of this tournament. You know, back then we all got T-shirts. My phone blew up. As I'm talking to him, because everybody's like, I got to get one of those t-shirts. And they just didn't have a ton of them. Now everybody gets rings and whatever. But as I talked to him, I think I put this in my post. I said, hey, that's an amazing performance. How does it feel? And he goes, well, look, I'm not out there playing Kevin Garnett or Dirk Nowitzki or, you know, Hall of Famers. But if I step on the court, I'm going to try to win. And I'm going to play as hard as I can every time. And he kept those words throughout his time here. it was amazing to watch that. Then that later that season, as people that listen to the broadcast know, we do a thing called Grizz Files. We kind of got tired of asking players, hey, you got to guard SGA tonight. What do you do?
And right.
Well, it's really hard. He's a 2-time MVP. What do you think? And so we wanted to get to know our guys. We wanted our fans to get to know our guys. That was part of the culture that we wanted to build, and we started building with the core four and built it through that and then started building with these guys. So just sitting down and talking to him about his journey, And having the connection of being from the Bay Area and him going to San Jose State and knowing some people he knew down in the Phoenix area, we were able to connect a little bit more. And it was at our hotel in Denver. And that, ironically, was the same place where I saw him in the elevator after his ruptured Achilles. A lot of time had passed, and a lot of good memories and a lot of good conversations, a lot of great on-court highlights. His performance in the playoff series against Minnesota was remarkable. And I think that's where I really got stuck on the last couple of days, thinking about how ironic a lot of this is. My first, Grizz Files with him, and really where I got to know even more about him than I did, was in Denver. One of the hardest moments I've ever had in my career, being on that elevator with him, knowing he had just ruptured his Achilles, in my head thinking it's really bad, seeing the look on his face as I was going up to my room just to drop my stuff off before we went out for a post-game meal, and looking at his face and knowing, yep, my suspicions were true. This is really bad. And all I could say to him was, like, hang in there, man. Like, you're strong enough to come back from this. It's going to take time. It's going to take patience. We're all behind you. And he, typical BC style, gave me a hug and said, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. And then seeing him come back this year in Minnesota was his one real game, not the game he played 2 minutes at home. And we're in Minnesota. We get the upset win. We're in the post-game meal buffet, and pretty well known. If you're a broadcaster and there's a player, you step aside and go, brother, it's all yours. Like, get yours first. I will wait till you're done. And typical Brandon, he said, no, man, seriously, go. You've been here longer. I said, Brandon, please eat. It's fine. You played. I didn't. And I just, standing next to him, shoulder to shoulder, as we're, figuring out what we're going to have, I was like, how did it feel? Without making a big scene about it, because I didn't want a bunch of people, I didn't think you want a bunch of people asking him, but I felt we were cool enough where I could just kind of, look down and kind of like you're talking secretly, just go, how did it feel? And he looked at me and he started laughing and he said, it was like a dream. He said, I literally, after the first 5 seconds, felt like I was in a dream. And I said, well, you looked good. Like, you looked fluid. He goes, yeah, but my shot stunk. And I'm like, brother, like, you haven't been in an NBA game in a year. Cut yourself a break, dude. Like, it's okay, man. Like, it's been a minute. Like, relax. It's been a while. And I said, you'll get it. It'll be back. And he goes, I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. And then obviously the pain of seeing him come out 2 minutes in and them shutting him down. And then, Jeffrey, I mean, I know I've been babbling here, but I remember my last interaction with him. We were in our hotel in Atlanta this year in March. They've got a tremendous post-workout facility. I'm a big sauna steam room guy. If I can get a good, ride on a Peloton, maybe lift some weights, watch some sports while I'm getting a workout in, and try to not, let the rigors of the road make you as unhealthy as it can. And I came back to the locker I had, and around the other corner from where the massage therapy rooms are, came Brandon. And I was like, oh, hey. And he was like, hey, man, what were you doing? And I said, well, I just got my workout in. I said, sauna and steam room, brother, if you work out, phenomenal here. He goes, yeah, I know. And I said, just get a massage, blah, blah, blah. And then I asked him how he was doing. And he basically said, hey, I think I could go right now, but I understand why they're shutting me down. Sorry for my phone beeping.
You're good.
And I could see that it was hurting him, that he really wanted to be on the court and really felt like he could be on the court, and was basically being told, we don't want to risk anything. Get your body right. And he understood that that was the right thing to do for him. And I said, man, I get it. You're a competitor. I said, but this season's script is written, dude. Like, if we were fighting for a playoff spot, 15 would be in the lineup. But we're not, and it is what it is. So get your body right and come back strong. And typical BC, he always used the phrase, my guy. It wasn't just reserved for me. And he gave, the little the handshake and half bro hug. My guy, I appreciate you. And I said, good luck with everything. If I don't see you bouncing around before the end of the year, pulling for you. And, stay strong, brother. And, he just kind of gave me that. He said, you don't know how much that means. He gave me that look like, hey, I appreciate you. and it's like burned into my memory, the look in his face. And I don't think there was anything there that was a warning sign. It was just that look of, I'm anxious to be back. I want to be part of this. And when you're not, it hurts. You know, I haven't had to experience that. I've been very lucky. But the two games I missed because I had COVID and had to drive back from the West Coast and then had to call two games from my house, I felt like I was lost. I was a million miles away. And I can't imagine what a player feels like. So, you know, when we talk about where this went, unfortunate, I shudder to really even discuss it because it's not going to change what happened. You know, people make decisions and sometimes they're not good decisions. And microanalyzing it and thinking about it and trying to figure out the why doesn't change the result. And it's gut-wrenching. I found myself angry at the fact that after it happened and we knew it had happened, and Jeffrey, obviously you and I had spoken that day because it was a week ago today, and we agreed it was probably best for me not to join you. And I apologize for that, but I mean...
No, it was the right decision.
I wouldn't have been very good.
I got to tell you, you know as well as anyone, when you have this job, there's no such thing as a real bad day in terms of what the rest of the world goes through. That's the worst day I've ever had a radio. That was brutal.
Well, and it's awful. I mean,
and then, you know, you're spending the whole morning just hoping it's not true, even though like you weren't really getting a lot of positive signs that, hey, maybe this could be. No, it was just brutal.
Yeah, and it's not like I haven't gone through this before, and that's unfortunate to say. But obviously, I went through it with Don.
Yep.
I went through it with Lorenzen. Both were very hard. Obviously, Don was probably the hardest because I was so close to him. And I think that got lost in the shuffle is Jason Collins was here. We had Jason Collins on our roster, and he was a good dude. I didn't have the opportunity to get to know him. Like 6 years with Brandon Clarke, 7 years with Brandon Clarke. And it's like, okay, that's very different. I mean, it was six full seasons, 7 years ago this July that I met him. But I found myself angry at waiting for knowing the announcement had been made public and watching national coverage of like NBA Today and all these other things. And all they're friggin' talking about is, is this LeBron's last game? And I get it, man. LeBron James is an icon. Somebody lost their life. Like that's in the league, like at least put it in the ticker. And I realized, hey, you know, who knows what's going on there. Getting angry wasn't going to do anything. And then I was sad. And then I don't know who put everything together, but there were a couple clips and you heard Pete's calls and then you heard a couple of my calls, and hearing one of my calls, I lost it because I remembered the call. I remembered the play, seeing the highlight, and remembering that was on the regular. Like the way he just elevated and seemingly soared to the basket. And we tried to put that in there. And then, you know, your thoughts go to his family. Looking at his Instagram page, knowing he had a sister that had just gotten married. Your thoughts go to, I knew how close he was with Jaren. Especially these last couple of years. They took the court together before the injuries every day at the same time. They came out of the tunnel together every game. They were together all the time. All the pictures of them at that All-Star break in Turks and Caicos, knowing how they were, knowing how close he was with his other teammates, knowing how genuine everybody felt he was. And they had him mic'd up, and I think he looked at John, and he says, "Dog, I love playing with you. I just love playing with you." And I think he said that to everybody because he loved playing. And, you know, who knows what's going on with his body and how he was feeling and what was going through his mind. And, it's so sad. And I thought about, you know, what do you take from it? How do you move forward from it? And I've always been a big believer in the world works in mysterious ways. Whether you're religious and you want to say the Lord works in mysterious ways, whether you're someone who just thinks, you know, events happen and we're never going to understand why. And when they do happen, and there's those ones that you go, hey, why this guy? Why now? Why when we're on a high after getting the number three pick, do we have to get knocked down to some of the lowest of lows, one of the lowest of lows, and lose someone very close to us? And I think I came to the realization is you can't dwell on the why, and you can't question what happened, and you just look back and you say, you know what? For 6 years of my career, I was blessed to watch that man play, to watch him live out his dream, and I was blessed to, I think, truly be able to call him a friend. And, you know, there's that line, as you and I have talked about, where broadcaster, player, and we respect that, and they're all good to us. They're all very cool to us. It doesn't matter who they are. You can take them all and think some guys aren't as nice as others, whatever. Everybody's cool to us. You know, from the biggest superstars like Ja and Mike Conley and Marc Gasol to the guys that are there for 2 weeks and gone, and they're all good to you because if you're part of it, you're part of it. But there's guys that take an interest, and I think I put it also because I only do the Instagram stuff usually during the season. Seeing Brandon every day, he would give the, what's up, my guy? Hey, how's your son doing? And I don't think it was one of those, I'm just going to ask to make myself look like I care. I think he genuinely cared because when he would see my son at games, he would come over and say hi to him, ask him how he was doing, how is, you know, what sports was he still playing? Is he playing basketball still, or is he still playing baseball? What's he doing? And I think he genuinely cared. And, you know, kids loved him. Kids love Brandon, and he loved kids, and adults love Brandon, and he loved the fans. And I think I just realized you're not going to sit here and dwell on the why or, oh, poor me, and just go, hey, I'm thankful for the time I had. I wish there was more. But I'm not going to look back at the time that I had and not be incredibly grateful for having, you know, been touched with in my life by his presence.
Eric, you're really great to join us. We appreciate your time and your thoughts, my man.
All right, brother.
That is Eric Hastein. Appreciate him on such a very, very tough subject. If you